to call my own. It was the kindest thing anyone had ever done for me, and I had repaid him with death. I do not regret that, for it was necessary, and he hadn't been the man I'd known. But even I am not so callous as to forget all that had come before. Outside the command bunker, the trenches were in chaos, noise and heat and panic mingling in a confined space. I could hear the slow slurp of moving mud, and I realized that things had become particularly unstable. But that was only of benefit to me. The longer it took for anyone to realize what had happened, the better. I knew that I couldn't trust anyone. The currents of corruption were too deep. Even those not infected might have been suborned. And even if they hadn't, would they understand? Would they be able to comprehend the holy necessity that drove me? I knew better than to hope for that. I navigated the confusion with all due speed, heading for the reinforced bunker that stretched the length of the forward line. It contained our regiment's supply of munitions and las rifle power cells. Where the other bunkers were little more than square huts of ferrocrete, this one was a fortress. There were guards on duty in front of the entrance. There were always guards on duty, people coming and going, despite the burning skies and the thundering guns. Runners carried messages, servitors trundled carts of ammunition, a nigh constant stream of witnesses. But I was beyond caring at that point. As I'd suspected, the guards weren't human. Blue eyes met mine as they tossed off sloppy salutes. They couldn't even be bothered to pretend any more. "I've come to inspect the bunker," I said.
"On whose authority?" one asked harshly.
I blinked. "My own?"
"I am sorry, Commissar, but the Colonel said—"
I shot him. As he fell and his companion turned, I drew the bayonet from my coat and slammed it into his throat, where his environment, mask and uniform overlapped. I twisted the blade and wrenched it free in a gush of red. I knew the code and opened the bunker, heedless of the staring faces I left in my wake. I heard shouts and klaxons echoing through the trenches and wondered if the colonel had been discovered. I knew I didn't have much time. If the regiment was to be saved, the infection had to be purged. The interior of the bunker was divided into numerous chambers, all splitting off from a central hall. This hall held the bulk of the munitions. It also held the cogitator nodes that controlled the bunker's failsafe. In the event of the trenches being overrun, the regiment was to fall back to this last redoubt to await reinforcement. Failing that, the bunker would be destroyed by the failsafe built into its substructure. If defeat was a sin, a still greater one was the surrendering of precious materials to the enemy. Only three people had the codes to control the failsafe. The colonel had been one, I was another, and the munitions master was the third. So I killed her next. You might question my reasoning, but it was simple enough. What one of us could initiate, the other could abort. I could not risk her being compromised, and so I shot her. I did so with regret and all due mercy. She never saw it coming. It was necessary, but unfortunate. My duty was clear. I like to think that should she have been aware of the situation, she would have agreed with my chosen course of action. She was a stern woman, hatchet-faced and grey-headed. She ran her fiefdom with admirable efficiency, and our paths had crossed only once during an investigation into an incident of theft. By all accounts, she had been pleased with my solution to the problem, summary execution of the offender. That is why I say that I am sure she would have understood. Like the colonel, I think she knew that I was the only thing standing between the regiment and anarchy. I saw her before she saw me. She was hurrying towards the entrance, one hand on her sidearm, two servitors plodding in her wake. They were ugly things, too little meat, too much machine. Death is a mercy compared to servitor conversion. I often wondered if there was anything left of who they had been in those withered skulls, or whether all the cabling and metal had squeezed out all traces of personality.
"Commissar,"
she called out. "Is something amiss? It's rare that you leave the front." She paused. "What are those klaxons? What's going on?"
"The colonel is dead," I said quickly. "We're under attack."
"The colonel!" she began, her face pale. "How?"
"There's no time. Come, take me to the failsafe."
"What? But—"
She paused and stepped back, eyes narrowed. Her hand fell to her sidearm, and she half turned, as if to give orders to the servitors, but my shot silenced her. I still don't know what gave me away. It could have been anything. Perhaps she simply read it in my eyes. The servitors watched her crumple to the floor with dead, flat gazes. When it became clear that she was no longer capable of giving orders, those gazes switched to me. I gestured with my last pistol. "Go. Guard the entrance. Keep everyone out." I paused. "Lethal force authorized." They plodded past, servos whining. They would follow my orders until they were destroyed, or another officer commanded them to stand down. Either way, they would buy me the time I needed. Quickly, I made my way through the racks of weapons and munitions. The failsafe was located at the rear of the hall, where the bank of cogitator alcoves sat. The alcoves were set deep into the reinforced walls, and the lights of the cogitators were visible in the gloom. Servitors had been wired into the crannies that were interspersed between the alcoves, and they murmured pre-recorded hymns to the cogitators' machine spirits, keeping them docile. The regiment suffered a paucity of engine seers and tech adepts, something I was grateful for at that moment. But as I drew near to my goal, I heard the telltale scrape of a boot on ferrocrete, and a voice said, "Valimar." Startled, I spun, going for my last pistol. I saw a familiar face. The colonel's aide. I wondered what he was doing here. I got my answer when he drew his weapon, a heavy autopistol. Not regulation, but an officer's aide is often considered exempt from such strictures. Nonetheless, I took note of it.
"You killed him," he said softly. "You vicious, stupid little bastard. Why did you have to kill him?"
His first shot came quickly on the heels of his condemnation. I managed to duck aside to put a ferrocrete rack between us. Heart hammering, I drew my own weapon. I wondered how he'd got past the servitors before I recalled that as the colonel's aide, he likely knew the proper rituals.
"You don't understand," I called out. "It had to be done. He was compromised. Now, if you'll just let me explain."
The autopistol boomed again, loud in the confines of the ammunition bunker. The shots would soon draw attention. I knew I had to end things quickly, but I loathed to kill an innocent man. And yet, even as the thought occurred to me, I wondered if he was. If the colonel had been taken, why would the aide have been spared? I knew then that the enemy had realized the nature of my plan and had come to prevent it. More shots followed this revelation, driving me further to the edges of the hall. Of course he was one of them. I look back now and realize how laughable it was to assume otherwise. Of course he was one. Of course. And likely he had been from the beginning, always sneaking about, spying on his betters, eavesdropping on private conversations. If I'd been more diligent, I'd have realized it sooner and found an excuse to execute him. But my loyalty to the colonel had blinded me, made me negligent. Angered by the thought, I moved quickly, hoping to circle around him before he spotted me again. I knew that if I could get the drop on him, the fight would end quickly.
"Where are you, Valimar?"
he called out, his voice echoing oddly in the space of the hall.
"Come out."
"You first," I replied. I thought that if I could keep him talking, I could distract him. "How did you find me?"
"I followed you. You didn't notice. You're not very observant, Valimar."
I am honest enough to acknowledge that his comments stung at the time. He was right.
I had been unobservant. I had failed in my duty to the colonel and to the regiment. But I intended to redeem myself.
"Maybe not. But I know you now," I said. "I thought at first that the captain was the ringleader, then perhaps the colonel, but I see the truth now. It's you. It's always been you. Creeping about, listening at doorways, unnoticed. This is your doing, all of it, but it won't work, I know now, and soon others will as well. I'll tell command, I'll—"
I froze then, the words forgotten on my lips as I heard the click of an auto-pistol being readied.
"Turn around, murderer."
I did so, slowly. The aide glared at me over the barrel of his weapon, his eyes like chips of ice. The auto-pistol was aimed at my head.
"Drop your weapon."
I tossed my las-pistol aside. He frowned.
"Both of them."
Reluctantly, I drew my bayonet from my coat and dropped it to the floor. He nodded, a grim expression on his nondescript face.
"I told him," he'd said, as if I'd asked a question. "I told him that you couldn't be trusted. All those incidents stretching back to the Scholar Progenium. Even his friends in command warned him. Told him you were a mad dog, that your only place was with a penal legion or a firing squad. But he didn't listen. He thought he needed you, thought he could control you, and then you turned on him. He tried to kill me."
"Shut up, Valimar.
You're done."
"Commissar," I said. He jerked the trigger. I admit, in that moment, I was certain that I had come to the end of my duty. I saw my life unravel before me. Moments of satisfaction and frustration tumbled over one another in my mind's eye. I saw every enemy I'd killed baying in triumph. But the God Emperor was with me then, as he is with me now. There was only a doleful click. The auto-pistol was empty. Or perhaps it had jammed. I smiled then. "The God Emperor is at my shoulder, and I shall know no fear," I said. "And you should have practiced proper fire discipline. That's an infraction." I tackled him before he could run. He fought like a cornered animal, cursing and panting. But he was no soldier, not really. Just an old man now, whatever he had been. An old man with monstrously blue eyes. I will not pretend that I didn't take pleasure in hitting him. I tore the auto-pistol from his hands and used it to batter him bloody. He groaned and clutched at me, asking for mercy, perhaps. I had none to give him. There could be no mercy for such creatures. To threaten a regiment of the Astra Militarum was to threaten the Imperium and the God Emperor himself, for the God Emperor is the Imperium and all who serve it. But turn from his light, and you will surely be cast into the outer darkness, there to weep for eternity. So I hit him, until the stock of the auto-pistol broke. I cast the pieces aside and crouched over him. He still lived, and while he lived, the regiment was in danger. I had no choice. My duty was clear.
"Your mistake was in leaving me alive," I said, as I gripped his throat in my hands.
The bayonet and my las pistol were both out of reach. But sometimes it is best to do things the old-fashioned way. "If you'd killed me first, I never would have seen you, but I did. And now I'm going to kill all of you filthy creatures. Whatever you are, you will not claim the soul of this regiment." He gagged and gabbled, clawing at my wrists, his bloody face going purple. It made his blue eyes stand out all the more, and as they blazed into mine, I tightened my grip.
"You will not," I said again, leaning forwards. "I will not let you."
His neck broke, even as his throat crumbled in my grip. I sat back, adrenaline surging. I waited for his eyes to darken back to whatever shade they had been before the infection had taken him. But they didn't, and I wondered if his eyes had always been blue, or maybe he had been their master all the time, a spider spinning a web in plain view. Scenarios flashed across my mind, each more sinister than the last. It all made sense then, whichever one proved true. As the Colonel's aide, he had been free to go everywhere and anywhere, and no one would have noticed. What better camouflage for such a creature? Whatever sort of creature he was, I still didn't know. It didn't matter. I knew my enemy. I knew how to stop them. I did not need to know their name. Alarms wailed as I stumbled to my feet. My hands ached. If you have never throttled another person, you cannot imagine the ache in your fingers and palms afterwards. It is as if you have strained every muscle one after the other. But there was something satisfying in it, regardless. A savage joy. I felt it, I admit. There was something pure about it. Would that all the foes of humanity knew their end at the hands of honest men and women. I passed through racks of weapons on my way to the control alcove. I took a las rifle and extra power cells. I would not have time to reload the weapon in the conventional manner, not if my plan succeeded. When I reached the failsafe, I found it simple enough to prime and activate. Then, with the stock of the las rifle, I smashed the cogitator panels, preventing any reprieve and silencing the alert klaxon. The sentence had been passed and would be carried out without warning. After that, I made my way back to the upper levels of the bunker, traversing creaking gantries and ferrocrete walkways. Once outside, I paused. The uppermost level of the bunker overlooked the nearest trenches. Shapes raced to and fro like insects beneath a burning sky. I heard shots from below and knew that someone had discovered the guards I'd dispatched and the servitors. They would have been on me in moments if I'd remained there. Instead, I whispered a prayer to the God Emperor and trusted in his protection. I leapt from the bunker and fell to the mud below. Something jolted in me when I landed and I felt as if I couldn't breathe, but I scrambled to my feet nonetheless. I knew that time was against me. I had only moments to put as much distance as possible between myself and the bunker. The explosion lifted me off my feet and sent me flying. Ribs snapped as I hit the ground, and it was all I could do to hold on to my weapon. Agony gripped me, but duty forced me to my feet. The sky was on fire, not from the guns this time, but from the explosion, and the ground shook like a wounded animal. All it had taken was one good hit in the right place. The trenches convulsed and crumbled, not just in part, but the whole of the network, every trench, every cut, all dissolving into a savage torrent of boiling mud. I heard screams rising up, and the crash as our guns were caught and crushed beneath the mud. Further explosions ripped through distant trenches, and the fire in the sky grew brighter, like the glow of the God Emperor's light shining down on his enemies. I ran through the mist and smoke, my breath ragged in my lungs. I ran across the top of collapsing trenches, despite the danger. I ran to a point I'd chosen earlier, high up and solid enough that I could overlook the trenches as they filled. The only safe point was above the line, in the open. Most of the regiment wouldn't have time to reach the heights before they were swept away by the soup, and I would be waiting on those that did. It was the only way to be sure, the only way to keep the regiment safe from the horrors that nested within it. Sometimes salvation is found only in death. I had to be sure, you see. I could not afford to let any escape. The God Emperor had set me a task, and I was determined to see it done. I stood, backlit by the flames, wrapped in smoke, and waited until the first survivors groped their way from the wreckage, coughing and weeping. A trooper, just like the others. Bloody. Beaten. Blue-eyed. I felt the wind then. Heard it, and thought that it sounded like a voice. The voice of the divine will that drives us all. And I knew that my course was set. I shot the first of them. I shot them all, one by one. I'm sure I executed the innocent as well as the guilty in that cacophony of moments. I do not remember if they all had blue eyes or not. Regardless, I shot them until no more came, and there was only the murmur of mud and the thunder of the enemy's guns pounding at non-existent positions. I had to be sure. I had to be certain. I am certain. Afterwards, I was taken into custody. I will spare you the details of those final days. The enemy fled, I'm sure. Or maybe there never had been an enemy. Maybe it was all a plot by the infected to pit loyal soldiers of the Imperium against one another. All I know is that the soldiers of another regiment, one as battered and as hollow-eyed as my own had been, found me crouched in the mud with an empty las rifle in my hands. There was talk of a court-martial, and even an execution, but it was just talk. They let me go in the end. I was judged by a council of my peers. Only commissars may pass judgment on fellow commissars. I had done nothing wrong, committed no infraction that anyone would admit to. I had merely done my duty. I was told I would be assigned to a new regiment once matters had been settled, and I am content with that. But even so, sometimes I wonder. I wonder if I acted correctly, or if my actions allowed some of them to escape. Mostly these thoughts come whenever I see a flash of blue out of the corner of my eye. I think often of the aide's words just before I killed him, about command and the colonel's friends, that they'd warned him against me. Could there be more of these blue-eyed devils in the upper echelons of the Munitorum? Do they still hide among the teeming billions? Are they watching me even now? I hope not. If they are, I do not think they will make the same mistake twice. But I am watching for them. If I catch sight of one, I know my duty. And that is enough.
Silence. Part 2.
And that is what I remember.
He stiffened as the hollow clang of funerary bells sounded somewhere out of sight. He caught a glimpse of a mortuary servitor stalking down the avenue, a shrouded body clasped to its inhuman torso. There was no telling where they took them, or why.
They're preparing them for burial. It's a tradition. They leave the dead to themselves for a time, and then take them below, where they're harvested and prepared for burial.
Harvested?
Valimar's head still ached. His skull felt as if there were a crack running all the way through it, letting in light and heat. His brains felt as if they had been cooked, and it was hard to think about one thing for too long.
Removal of organs, flensing, sacramental scrimshawing.
More traditions.
Yes.
I hate this place. Why are they watching us?
Venderson jerked her chin towards a pair of distant servitors, standing unmoving among the biers. The automata studied them with red, unblinking gazes before moving off in opposite directions. Soon they were lost to the rising mist, the only sign of their presence, the ringing of their bells.
Maybe they were listening to the Commissar's story.
He scratched at his chest, and for an instant Valimar thought he saw something move beneath the man's robes. But it was just a trick of the light.
Sounded more like a confession to me. I think they were right. You are crazy. Only a crazy man would come up with that type of story.
Maybe not. I've heard stranger things on my journeys.
I bet you have.
She ran a hand through her hair, and as Valimar watched, she suddenly wasn't herself at all anymore, but something torn and red and dead. A strip of teeth grinning in a mask of ripped meat. Her arms were soaked crimson to the elbows, and there was blood everywhere. He shook his head, banishing the image.
What is it?
Maricus thought he heard something in her voice. He flinched and realized that he'd been staring. She balled her fists.
What are you looking at?
Nothing.
She looked away.
It is only fair. He told us his tale.
Then why don't you do it, priest?
What are you so frightened of?
For a while, she didn't answer. But then, at last, in a halting voice, she began. The Woman in the Walls, written by Phil Kelly, narrated by Emma Gregory.
Incapacitate her, I said. Those were my exact words. Incapacitate her. Never trust the Savlar, they say. Even the word itself is a curse amongst us Nocti. Spend 10 minutes in a room with the stim-addicted scumbags and you'll find yourself walking out with a lot less in the way of worldly possessions than you went in with. If you have the misfortune to meet my old trench mates in the 270s, you might not walk out at all. I should have known those idiots would push it too far. Once a penal legion, always a penal legion, whatever their precious great pardon might say. Perhaps I knew they would revert to type if I left them unsupervised. Perhaps that's why I paid them. Because then I could pretend I wasn't culpable. Typical Liana behaviour, as Maricel used to say. As if the smug blue blood and I were friends. We weren't friends. It's easy to see it all so clearly after the event, I suppose. Maricel Thorne was a field commander in the Nocti 337th, for Terra's sake. Of course she wouldn't go down without breaking some heads first. Just lucky no one else got wise to what actually happened. I still technically have a clean sheet, even if I can't sleep worth a damn these days. I should have known they'd act out on the one mission I needed really quiet. The things the chem dogs thrive on most of all, aside from resp drugs and black marketeering, are being underestimated, and more than that, being unpredictable. They love it. They are intoxicated by it. Their guile and competence is hidden by the fact everyone who fights alongside them paints them as thieves, crooks and madmen, even cannibals. And not without good reason, I suppose. A few of them have resorted to it in the bad times. I know that for a fact. Sometimes, on the front, you have no choice. I certainly didn't, when we were starving and desperate in the mountains of Herod. I earned the 270's obedience that time, fair and square. And what do my hounds of war do? Soon as I really need them, they piss all over the rug. Addicts are easy to manipulate right up until the point that they aren't. But I chose them for a reason. The Savlars are hardcore militarum, through and through, and I've used them dozens of times in the past. Those who have seen them engage know they are some of the most ruthless killers you'll ever fight alongside. Not that Maricel would have understood that. Such superior, gold-nosing types never lower themselves to fighting with the troops in the corpse furrows. If she had, maybe she'd still be alive, even if only to slum it with the rest of us. First Captain Maricel Thorne had served alongside the firstborn sons of Vostroia, the Ventrilian nobles. even alongside Bulvat in the Mordian elite. She had not a single scar to show for her stellar 15-year career, but that didn't stop her harping on about her accomplishments, as if she were a war hero at a post-victory feast. Empress Teeth, it still makes my skin crawl to think how she peppered her speeches with terms like meta-strategy and regiments of distinction. To me, that means regiments where you are more concerned about which silver utensil to use in the mess hall than you are about where the enemy gun nests are. Who cares how many men you're about to send against impossible odds when the Jadebury souffle is getting cold? I bet she fit right in with those overprivileged pricks. I heard Jack and Otto, one of the Noctai lads, refer to Maricel Thorn as the Angel once. I nearly threw up in my mouth. Instead, I wrote him up on some inventively worded charges of grand blasphemy and made sure he got latrine duty for a week. Had she ever seen combat in her whole life? Had she ever cleaned a bayonet matted with blood and hair? Gouged out an eyeball or smelled the tang of a burned-out lasgun cell? I seriously doubt it. No, she just wandered through the echelons high on the smell of her own cess. I worked my way into this position. It took me 30 years of blood, death and nightmares. And guess what? I get second place again. Makes you sick, really. Sick enough to do something about it. When Field Commander Bol Gurteen got his chest shot out by a rebel's bullet, I gave my bid to replace him everything I had. The scuttle said it was between Her Imperial Highness and me. Threnard had intimated that no one else was really close. As a Noctai dock rat born and bred, I had one major advantage over Maricel Thorn. Endurance. I must have walked 100 miles that week, and more, sowing the seeds of my own success. But it's a well-known fact that we Noctai ground pounders never give up. And that's especially true of our women. My old trenchmate, Vix Densat, once told me I helped cement that reputation over the highs and lows of my career. It's a memory I've treasured for some time. I'm never happy sitting still, in any case, especially when I'm against the clock. So I called in every favour, doubled down on every front, and orchestrated 3 big pushes. Meantime, I got my old feast mates, the 270s, to spread every dirty secret I could dream up about Maricel, whether it was half-true or complete fabrication. That same week, she took the planetary governor's palace with words alone. No shots fired, resources saved, lives spared. Great. Her holier-than-thou image reinforced once again. But who's to say that the agents of the arch-enemy won't sway those same biddable fools back the other way? Not that old Bulvat saw it like that. Expediency is a weapon, as he tells us at every possible opportunity. It's a mantra that was beaten into him by his own commanding officer, a domineering bastard we called the Butcher of Noctai, for sending 3 million of us on a one-way trip into the meat grinder. Very expedient, I'm sure. Bulvat sent maybe half that to their deaths thus far. The old Mordian cretin thinks he's a modern-day Macarius. Maricel's the one Bulvat's chosen to carry the torch when he finally has that fatal heart attack. He won't get any objections from the regimental priests, either. She's at the front in every service. Bulvat and his emperor-loving cronies were all puffed up with pride when Her Highness charmed the place's gates open in less than a day. Their poorly hidden infatuations vindicated once more. My gut churns just thinking about it. In the debrief, she cited as her spur to action the fact that we had spent a whole week trying to shatter the gates with brute force to no avail. Throne, she actually said that. I've carried those mannered, damning words with me ever since. And by we, she meant Lyanna of course. I caught her sideways glance just fine, and I wasn't the only one. Within a month of her miraculous victory, she was standing under Ung Tem City's statue of the Emperor Ascendant, back ramrod straight and eyes forward, to receive the rank of Field Commander First Class. As a captain, albeit second class, I had a front row seat for the whole thing. I had to stand bolt upright for 3 hours in full uniform, sweat trickling down my back and my dress shoes squeezing my feet like torture clamps. At the end, I even had to salute her. I almost choked when it was time to recite the oaths. That's when I made the decision, right then and there, that Maricel Thorne was going to take a fall. Throne above, but how I've paid for it since then. Even now I keep seeing that silhouette, all broken up and wrong, in the dead of night. I still hear the tapping noises, then that damn scratching, like nails dragged across a splintered plank of driftwood. Post-warp auditory hallucination, they call it, but I don't know. It feels more real than that. She won't leave me alone. I have to tell someone, or I'll likely never sleep again. Within 10 hours of Maricel's unfortunate accident with the 270s, I was summoned to attend Bulvat in the Marinista's palace. It's a tall, spire-tipped building with a commanding view of the Seaward Quadrant. We'd used it as our HQ since the first week of the campaign, and despite the rebels' best efforts, it still stood proud. Colonel First Class Leonid Vostok Bulvat, the High Patriarch of the Tem War Group, was a shiny-headed brute squeezed into a double-breasted tunic. He had a temper like a phosphor round. But there was not one of us officers that didn't see the balding tyrant as some kind of father figure. The kind that beats the discipline into you. But underneath all the hate and fear, you somehow want to impress him nonetheless. I was looking forward to seeing him on the long walk down the corridors. About as much as I looked forward to a de-lousing treatment in the scour cubes. A sharp knock, a deep breath, and into his office I went.
"Know anything, Venderson?"
he said, blurting out the words before I'd even closed the heavy iron-bound door. It felt like being barked at by a guard hound, and I had to fight back a flinch of distaste. I closed the door carefully and breathed out slowly to settle myself. The scent of oiled mahogany and shine brass mix was rich in there. A note of rotten fibres cut through it, likely from the threadbare Talon rug that old Bulvat was too stubborn or sentimental to throw away. "Nothing to speak of, High Patriarch," I said, staring straight ahead at attention stance.
"Nothing to speak of."
His tone was full of contempt.
"Vague as ever, elusive as ever. Don't you Noctai ever give a straight answer?"
"I wasn't there, sir. I can give you second-hand information at best. I don't openly fraternise with the rank and file. You always said it was bad practice."
"Where were you, then?"
"On the rec level, sir. Playing hexagrammon with Vix Denstat. Trying out a new strategy for when you and I next get time enough for a game." He actually snorted at that.
"Emperor knows you could use the practice."
"Captain Densat and I played right through the Vespertine hours until just after midnight, sir. I was nowhere near Field Commander Thorne's quarters at the time of the incident."
"You didn't have to be. This incident had third party written all over it, and it was a full-blown murder, as well you know."
"A tragic waste of life, without doubt," I said, still staring straight ahead. Meeting his gaze when he was in this kind of mood was a bad idea.
"The first men on the scene said that there was the smell of resp drugs in the air. Chemdog stims, according to Threnard's assessment. And he's not a man given to making mistakes."
That was certainly true. Bulvat's adjutant, Macaval Threnard, was fiercely competent, acutely observant, and one of the few people in the war group I was still a little bit afraid of. I felt a weird mingling of hatred and respect whenever I was around him.
"Didn't you serve with the Savlar back on Torpentire, second captain?"
"Briefly," I replied. "But then I've served with 9 regiments and counting. My hands are clean, High Patriarch. Send Threnard to check my movements if you don't believe me."
"I will, when he gets back. And when I find out who did this, I'll beat their bones to kindling."
I had no doubt he meant it. Corporal punishments were Bulvat's vice, many and often. A traditional Mordian by birth, he didn't wait for the commissariat to dish out the discipline. No, sirrah, good old Colonel Bulvat was always ready with his iron-cored swagger stick, breaking knuckles and splitting scalps every other day just to keep his hand in. "So what happened exactly, sir?"
"I wondered why you weren't asking that," he said, eyeing me up and down. "Field Commander Thorne was ambushed in her quarters."
"What? Who by?"
"The Chem Dogs, woman. Wash out your ears for sake of the God Emperor."
"Chem Dogs, plural?"
"Yes, plural. Medicae Corps reported 4 different blood signs in the spatter. There was plenty of it, all over the desk, the bank and the floor. Saturated was the exact term Threnard used."
"So they what, beat her? Shot her?"
"They found their way into the room with a stolen access code whilst she was asleep. From Threnard's preliminary inspection of the scene, they broke her limbs before killing her. All 4 of them."
"Thrown? Why do that just to kill her afterwards?"
"You tell me, Venderson."
"Someone else intervened?"
"Not to my knowledge. No one has come forward."
I felt the tension in my throat subside just a little.
4 blood signs suggests she did a fair bit of damage back."
"I would say so,"
he scoffed, more pain than humour in his laughter.
"She may have been slight, our Maricel, but she was fearsome in a corner."
"Are we sure it was the Chem Dogs?"
"Combat steams,"
he said, holding his hands wide as if that removed all doubt, and looking at me as if I was a dunce.
"Who else uses them in the war group?"
"Well, a few Athonians, I know that much. Some of the Indigan prefects, too. Salat Helms hide that sort of thing easy enough."
"Do they?"
"And the Miasman Red Cows, sir. They have plenty of users, I hear, and the Stim's scent's easy to hide under their fumes. Thorn had enough detractors that the culprit could be from any one of 6 regiments."
"You seem very well versed in the subject of Chems, second captain."
"I am well versed in every subject concerning the Astra Militarum, sir, high and low. It's why you keep me around."
"Emperor knows it's not for your respectful demeanour."
The old man shifted in his chair, a tall-backed throne of Ventrillion brass and priceless Catachan fire oak, upholstered in deep red leather that squeaked as he shifted his weight. One day, I would sit in that chair, whatever it took, and I would not find a position uncomfortable in the slightest. I had promised myself that long ago. "So if one of the blood signs was Thorn's, that means at least 3 assailants," I said.
"Threnard thinks 6, sighed Bulvat. "Poor girl. She didn't deserve all that."
He seemed shrunken for a moment, his broad shoulders sagging and his ruddy, booze-warmed features wrinkled in consternation. It made him seem old and beaten. He reached out a hand to a decanter of Mordian crystal and poured himself a measure of the syrupy liquid before slugging it back.
"I hate to think about it. She must have fought like a wild cat to keep them away. Wasn't enough."
"A horrible thought,"
I said. Playing hexagrammon gives you a good dead man's mask, they say. I made the mistake of beating the High Patriarch once, early in my career. I still remember his face turning red. I swear that night set me back 3 years of hard graft up the ladder. Since then, I'd let Bulvat win so often, I have him convinced that one time was a fluke, and that he's a good deal better at navigating the liar's maze than I. He doesn't seem to realise I'm playing a different game altogether. And I have been for years. Do you need me to join the investigation? I can make a few quiet inquiries.
No,
said Bulvat, elongating the word to make sure I got the message loud and clear.
You're going nowhere near it. In fact, given the circumstances, you're a principal suspect. If I find any shred of evidence that you were involved, you won't make it to the commissariat. I'll execute you myself.
Sir, I said, opening my hands, I'm not stupid. Yes, I was hoping to outclass Field Commander Thorne in the next war zone, maybe even discredit her if I could. I've been gunning for the same rank, but I could never have a fellow guardsman killed, and certainly not one of my own. They say the best lies have their basis in truth, after all. I never said to kill her.
I know you wouldn't, Leanna, said the Colonel. Even you wouldn't stoop to murder.
I felt something squirm inside, but my face was like carven marble. I let the seconds tick by, watching Bulvat stare into nothingness out of the corner of my eye. Sir, is Tem still an operative theatre after the Governor's surrender?
What?
He said, his eyes refocusing.
Yes. Yes, it is. But we're on the cusp of victory here. Another push or two, and we'll have the outskirts. Maricel took the capital with words alone, you know. Saved a few thousand guns, I'll wager.
So everyone keeps saying, I said. I did my best to smile ruefully. The regiment won't be the same without her.
Are you up to the task of taking this city back to Imperial standard, Venderson?
I am already doing so, I said. I took a data slate from the back of my fatigues, rubbing some life into its activation stud with my thumb. I have their secondary base isolated and my platoon is in place to capitalise. A schematic of Tem sprung up, marked carefully with my findings from over the last few weeks. Bulvat's brow furrowed, his white eyebrows meeting. The slate's dim light cast his features in a yellowish pallor. Within seconds he was lost in interlocking manoeuvres, and I was halfway towards the freedom of the corridors. I had a lot to do, and at the first chance I got, I intended to catch up with some old friends. Sergeant Vernid and her fellow 270s showed up to the hangar late. Late enough to let me know she was not afraid of me, but not so late I would make an example of one of her men, or force them to leave empty-handed. It's a fine tightrope we tread, the Savlar and I. But we've walked it for a long time, and we know its tolerance is just fine. They say the chem dogs are known for getting the job done without any comeback. I learned the truth of that in my first command on Torpentire. They have a reputation for being bad news, and with a nasty anti-authoritarian streak to go with it. But a broken skull, administered to the right person? That can be enough to bring them into line. I can vividly remember the first day I met Vernid and her squad down in the maintenance bay. One of my finest. Halfway through the inevitable war of words, I picked up a claw hammer, just as Jakobsen was making some crass comment about Noctai sea peasants being allowed to use guns. I got the fat waste of skin just right. A solid hit in the temple with the flat of the thing, hitting hard enough to split skin, but not hard enough for a court-martial. There was a lot of blood,
and a lot of laughter from the rest of the squad as he smeared it everywhere, trying to regain his balance. Tragedy and comedy all at once. Vernard laughed loudest of all, a proper hyena screech. She never let the big ox live it down, getting knocked out by someone half his weight. The 270s stopped giving me snide after that. Keeping them in stims has been easy enough. I still have plenty of connections, and my history in the Medicaid Corps is a gift that just keeps on giving. The combination of rank and black market clout has kept the Savlars eating out of my hand for years. But I always knew one day they would savage me, just for the spite of it. And lo and behold, they had dropped me right in the cesspit at the worst possible time. Even the way they walked irritated me, with that combination of slinking insouciance and resentful submission. Avoiding eye contact, not through fear, but in the pretense that everything else was more interesting.
"And here she is," said Vernard, emerging from the shadow of a decommissioned lightning fighter.
She slunk into the disused command hub I was using for my rendezvous. Like most of the original Savlars, she was chemically hairless. She had the thick black arrow mark of her former life as a convict in pride of place upon her forehead, a broken nose and a lopsided smile on her face. She seemed leaner than the last time I saw her, more like a piece of dried trail meat than ever.
"Here I am," I said,
opening my arms as if to invite attack. She ignored me. Her grey-blue eyes darted, checking every corner of the cogitator-walled room. Seeing nothing more dangerous than dust, she motioned to the rest of her squad, and Jakobsen, Doyler and Grother came forwards at a slouch. Vernard's eyes fell on the med crate I had behind me. That lopsided smile evened out then, face split by teeth that ran from yellow to rotten brown as she finally met my gaze.
"We thought you died, maybe."
She took a wheezing pull on her customised rest mask, then sketched a courteous bow. Thin plumes of chem residuals came from her nostrils, making me think of a drake holding back its fire.
"We've missed your moral guidance, Sirrah."
"Don't call me that, Vernard." She shrugged.
"Where have you been, Venderson? We were supposed to meet 2 days ago."
"Lying low," I replied. "Hard times."
"Not for us," said Grother, picking his teeth as he and his squad mates stepped inside.
A freaky tall flamer specialist with acne-pocked skin, the promethium reek from his stained clothing was even more obnoxious than his body odour.
"We got posted to a new billet. Lots of fresh meat there that ain't seen combat yet, and we've eaten well, figure of speaking, of course."
He smirked, casting a glance at Vernard as if to share a private joke. I shook my head in disbelief. If there was ever a chance to remind me of the horrors we had shared in the mountains of Herod, Grotha would seize it with both hands.
"Shame about the lovely Thorin, eh?"
said Jakobsen, his gut wobbling in silent mirth.
"Guess you heard we uncapacitated her pretty good for you."
Next to the big man, his hanger-on, Doyle, raised a finger and mimed slitting his throat with it, his underbite and greasy comb-over catching the light.
"She's dead,"
said Jakobsen, as if to clarify. "Emperor's grace," I said. "You don't get any subtler, do you, Jakobsen? Want another slap?" The big man's grin evaporated, eyes narrowing as resentment soured his mood. I felt a mirthless smile of my own creep onto my face and left it there. Jakobsen raised a fat hand to the side of his head and scratched the scar on his temple absently, as if weighing up what to say next.
"You didn't call us here for subtlety, Sirrah," said Vernard.
I sighed. "You going to tell me what in the Great Void happened?"
"It got messy," said Grother with a shrug. "She was awake, and she was a fair bit stronger than she looked. She fought good and hard.
To no avail, I said, the words escaping my lips before I caught myself.
You what?
Said Grother. Nothing. There were six of you, trained killers, and I had given you the access sigil to use on her door. How could you mess it up?
She was at her desk, working on some papers, said Vernard. All hunched over. She acted like she didn't hear us as we came in, but when we got close she moved like a snake. Had a parchment knife hidden under her arm too.
A parchment knife, I said, my tone as neutral as I could manage.
Yeah, said Jacobson. Park was first up. She dodged his grab and put a stabber right in the side of his neck, nice as you please. I got his blood in my eyes, just as little Furnace got her elbow in his throat.
You both must have trained under the same drill master, said Vernard, staring at me with her cold, appraising eyes.
Mine was better. So Pock's dead?
Pock's dead,
said Jacobson, blowing out through his fat cheeks.
Little Furnace is even deader.
Astonishing. What happened to the useless runt?
Furnace copped Thorn's knee to the balls, said Vernard. She clawed out his eye with one hand, grabbed his las pistol from its holster with the other, and shot him under the jaw. Brains everywhere. You had to see it.
She shook her bald head in admiration. Holy throne, I said, closing my eyes in disgust. And you just stood there, did you? Vernard shrugged again.
Rank hath its privileges. That's what all this is about, right?
I didn't rise to the bait. What about you, Doyler? Did you lift a finger to help? He shook his head.
Pretty slick killer she were, and I never liked Furnace anyway. I just left her to it.
He likes to talk tough, does that greasy bastard. But I have it on good authority he draws charcoal pictures of Adeptus Astartes in his spare time.
Runt's blood went everywhere, said Grother,
his voice a sinister whisper.
Fountains of the stuff. Didn't know we had it in him.
He laughed, short and nasty, before rasping into a racking cough.
We got her under control after that, said Vernard, though I earned a fresh crop of new war wounds in the process.
She pulled back her collar, showing multiple dark bruises and a set of deep scratches that looked infected.
She was thrashing and shrieking, fit to wake the dead, but we broke her bones in the end, one by one. Bits of white sticking out left and right, like little porcelain knives. Snap, snap, said Jacobson. Sounded a bit like wet firewood.
How lyrical, I said, my stomach turning as if I'd drunk a quart of vinegar. I'd seen many a broken body in the trenches, but this was somehow different. Grother nodded.
She went mad as a warp child. Feels like my ears are still ringing in the night.
I winced. I told you to muffle her first.
Couldn't get a gag on with all the blood, said Vernard. She was screaming like a griefer in full flow, biting and clawing as best she could. Made so much noise, I had to put her out of her misery with my bayonet before anyone else showed up.
She tapped the las rifle, slung over her shoulder.
Left some bloodstains still intact as proof of the deed, sirrah.
I told you to stop calling me that, I said, putting an edge in my voice. Vernard laughed.
You look as much man as Mamselle. No point denying it.
I stepped away from her, turning towards Jacobson as if to attack him instead. As the big guardsman flinched back, a donkey kicked Vernard in the leg. She half caught my boot with both hands, only just stopping me from taking her kneecap clean off. Whilst her guard was down, I wheeled around and backhanded her hard across the face. Jacobson slow clapped. Vernard spat a tooth, blood pattering on the deck.
Easy, officer,
she said, smiling through a mouthful of scarlet.
You got my chagrin for what it's worth.
She took a hit from her resp mask, rolled her neck and bounced on her feet like a pugilist.
Would you rather go again?
Chagrin's good enough, I said. For now. My appearance is no concern of yours. But if you can cut out the disrespect for 5 minutes, I have a job for you. One that even you lot can't botch.
Usual reward?
And the rest. Point A above usual. Half in advance. I patted the med crate that I dragged into the hangar. I would be glad to see the back of the bastard thing after lugging it all the way here.
1.8,
wheezed Grertha, his watery eyes alight through his goggles. He turned his head and took a pull of his own resp, as if in anticipation of a bonanza stim session to come.
I mean, whatever it is.
Me too,
said Doyler, coming forward to stand at Grertha's shoulder.
What's the job?
Said Vernard. Disappear, I said. Lay low. Don't do anything for anyone till I come to you.
That's it, said Grertha.
That's it.
For 1.8, I reckon we can manage that, said Vernard. Together with the stims from the last job, we'll have enough to keep even Grertha out of trouble.
You better. I'm already taking a crazy risk just meeting you.
You weren't followed. Trust us. We've got the ratlings on side.
I bet you have.
Common fault with common interests,
said Grertha, trying for that salt-of-the-earth shtick that serves the Savlar so well.
That's what gets the work done, see?
Really, I said. I could feel my lips pursing in contempt. Just get out of here and lay low until we move out. Have one of the cook rats send a missive if needed. I'll find you when things calm down.
Understood, said Vernard. And what will you be doing in the meantime, mamsell?
Conquering the city, I said. Now piss off. Next news I heard of the 270s was via Enoch Whitemane, our war group's rattling cook. That prune-faced little thief and I had our differences, but he's a useful contact, and for the right price he serves up more than just bad protein swill. Things had been quiet enough behind the lines. The official line on Maricel's death was that she had been killed by hardliner rebels who wanted to punish her for spoiling their fun. A decent enough story, via Enoch's network of information brokers, I had spread it around myself. I had made sure to appear visibly upset at the burial ceremony. Not difficult, given the fact I felt like someone was staring at me the whole time. I put it down to lack of sleep. Near enough, everyone had bought the cover story about her death. Make yourself a known target in a war with rebels, you're asking to be assassinated. Another good soldier dies horribly. Welcome to the guard. The Imperium breeds martyrs like a sump breeds gnats. And ones that look good on a poster are the best kind of all. Recruitment went up after Maricel's death. And other than Bulvat and his bloodhound Threnard, no one looked too closely at the whys and wherefores. I knew the old tyrant had come up with nothing, simply because he hadn't beaten me to a pulp just yet. Ung Tem was slowly, painfully brought back into compliance with Imperial rule. Cost us a lot of good men and women, but I made it happen, hab by hab. I developed plans within plans, and by and large, they came off. I redirected parts of Maricel's command as best I could.